Welcome to another message from Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center, Kansas. For more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. It is our prayer to invest in generations to influence community. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Steve Raines.
I want to talk to you about something that we all deal with. Some of us deal with it more than others because of the nature of maybe what we do or the environments that we find ourselves with. I mean, if you are in the customer service industry at all, you deal or you have to learn to deal with the subject of criticism, right? Because someone has once said that the customer is always... And when you're the customer, you're thinking that, but how many know you're not always right? Right, but we like to think that when we're in those shoes, but anyway, so the customer's always right. So we've been told a few weeks ago, Joy Bihar, I don't know if that's how you pronounce your last name, the lady from The View made some comments in reference to the faith of our vice president and just kind of ran him down a little bit and criticized his faith and his conviction that Jesus would actually speak to people. And fortunately, I don't know if it was legitimate or if she was sincere in her coming back and saying, apologizing for her comments. But anyway... She criticized our vice president, and if you watch shows like America Got Talent or American Idol or The Voice, then you will hear it. You'll hear the judges offering criticism. Some of it is good and worthwhile. Some of it's just really condescending. And so I just thought it would be fun because none of us have ever received criticism.
This concludes today's message. We hope you can join us next Sunday for services beginning at 10:30 at Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center. To get more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. And we hope you can join us next Sunday with Pastor Steve Raines.
it's a little bit ruthless with their criticism. I mean, just this, like, wow, you're just like, I feel the love. Not really, right? But he's like the master. And so today I want us to talk about criticism. And unfortunately, we live in a society of professional critics, don't we? I mean, we have the armchair quarterbacks. We have the individuals that the jersey-wearing fans who forgot that they aren't on the team. So it's really not their team. It's really not my team. They're just wearing the jersey, but they're the critic of the coach, right? I guess I was just being critical, wasn't I? Oops. But, you know, so here's the truth. There's two types of criticism, right? I mean, you're going to get criticized no matter what. So here's the deal. You're going to get criticized if you don't do anything, and you're going to get criticized if you do something. And so you might as well do something because it's harder to hit a moving target, is it not? And so why is this the reason? Why is this the reality? Criticism falls into two camps. There's constructive criticism that helps us grow in maybe areas of weakness in our life. There is destructive criticism that tears us down. And the reality is most of us don't like to be criticized about any areas of our life. I mean, it can be painful, isn't it? When someone comes to you and says, hey, I need to talk to you about something. I mean, we get a little bristled up or we get defensive right away. And it's interesting. It's like, you know, I will talk to somebody, I'll catch somebody on a Sunday morning or a Wednesday night or throughout the week. And I was like, hey, I need to talk to you. I'd like to talk to you. And all of a sudden it's like, what'd I do? You know, and it's like this category going through their mind. Let's see, I was at church last week. I didn't, you know, my name wasn't in the newspaper under the police department reports or anything like that. You know, it's like this thing. We get so defensive. We like react sometimes to people. It was funny. A couple of weeks ago, I had a dentist appointment. And as I was finally getting up to leave the torture chamber, the hygienist said to me, hey, before you leave, I have a question to ask. She was a student at the Wichita State. And so she's kind of learning the ropes. She's getting ready to graduate. And she said this, can you give me some feedback on how I did? And I was like, it's my turn now. For 30 minutes, I was captive, my mouth wide, you know, you prawn around with some sharp instrument, you know, now it's my turn. And I was so impressed that she was willing to say, hey, I want to get better. And so I talked to her about a couple things. And because how many know, I would rather eat a jar of horseradish than go to the dentist. Anyone with me on that one? And so I was like, yeah, and I just offered a few things because it wasn't a day at the spa when I go to the dentist. I hate going to the dentist. But I was impressed that she invited the criticism, and she did a great job. The Bible has a lot to say about criticism. Did you know that? In fact, it has a lot to say about being open to people who would come to you and would want to speak to you about stuff. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 17 says, whoever heeds instruction is on the path of life, but those who reject reproof leads other, but he who rejects reproof leads others astray. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 18 says, poverty and disgrace come to him who ignores instruction, but whoever heeds reproof is honored. Proverbs 15:31 says, the ear that listens to life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. Whoever ignores instruction despises himself, but he who listens to reproof gains intelligence. Maybe that's a good thing. You know, as parents, you know, when we need to confront our kids on something, hey, son, let me just open up to Proverbs. I want to read a Proverbs to you real quick before I share this with you, right? And Proverbs 18:15 says, wise men and women are always learning, always listening for fresh insight. Proverbs 19:20, listen to advice and accept instruction that you may gain wisdom in the future. Proverbs 25:12, a wise friend's timely reprimand is like a gold ring slipped on your finger. And then finally, Proverbs 29:1 says this, he who is often reproved yet stiffens his neck will suddenly be broken beyond healing. A lot of good stuff there in Proverbs about this topic. And all of those verses talk to us about the value of criticism, that not all criticism is bad. right? You may not like the source of criticism. You may not like the timing of it. You may not like the tone of the criticism, because we've all experienced that. But can I encourage each of us? Don't just allow that issue to fly by because maybe the tone or the timing wasn't right. Sometimes God is able to take the wrong timing and the wrong tone and the wrong attitude and use it to speak to things in our heart that need to be addressed. Sometimes criticism can be constructive and God can use it to develop us. Sometimes people only hear the language they speak, and so it has to come across direct. But when you come to Nehemiah chapter 4, Nehemiah isn't dealing with constructive criticism. He's dealing with destructive criticism. He's engaged in doing something great for God. And there are people who have come to Nehemiah and they weren't there to encourage him, support him, build him up, direct him in his endeavors. They were there to run him down and discourage him. And so we read in Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 1, or chapter 4, 1 through 6. Now, when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews and said in the presence of his brothers and the army of Samaria, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish it up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that?" Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, "Yes, what are they building? If a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone walls. Hear, O God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to plunder in the land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt and let not their sin be blotted out from your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders." Verse 6, "So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work." I want to talk to you about three things real quick from this verse on criticism, pertaining to criticism. One is this, the criticism he encountered. You look at it in verses 1 through 3. Nehemiah was rebuilding these walls, right? It was a mammoth task. It was a task. It was a big job. It was a task that required a lot to be able to accomplish it. We talked about that in chapter 3. And as he started to rebuild this wall, the people started to rebuild the wall. Two people come to him, and these two people are criticizing him. It wasn't constructive, it was destructive. And anytime you step out to do something for God, right? Anytime you step out to make a change, there's gonna be critics. It's just the way it is, unfortunately. And whenever you attempt to bring about change, it plays into the insecurities of others and the comfortability of others. And so they're gonna offer criticism to you. And I think at times we have to pause, and we'll talk about this in a moment, but to step back and to evaluate the criticism that is being offered and inspect our own heart. But not everyone around you will think what you're doing is a great deal or a great thing. And in Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, we read about Sanballat and his right-hand man, Tobiah, and the criticism and the skepticism that they're offering. You first meet these two individuals in chapter 2, verses 10 and 19. And as you arrive in Nehemiah 4, and you read about these same guys again, they always make this appearance. There's three of them. Only two of them are mentioned here in the first part of chapter 4. And they're always antagonizing. They're always offering criticism. One author that I've read in preparing for this message, this series, said this: Nehemiah had three specific enemies. Their names were Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. These men were from three different cultures that were displaced by the Israelites when God gave them the promised land generations prior. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem were not just your average meathead bullies. They were each regional governor serving under the king of Persia. They had positions of power, having been appointed by the king. They had influenced their people and they had history. They had deep resentment that burned against the Jews. And so these individuals are a little bit ticked off that the Jews are trying to rebuild this wall. Sanballat has gone through, has thrown out his criticism. We read it. He left no stone unturned in searching for reasons why the wall shouldn't be completed. I mean, you look at it, you read through it, and he criticizes their character. He questions their ability. He challenged their commitment to finish that which they started. And to top it all off, he questioned the feasibility of the project that they were attempting to do. And then Tobiah chimed in. And you read Tobiah's his criticism. He describes Nehemiah's entire work force as incompetent. Even if they were able to finish the wall, he makes this comment that even a weight of a fox, a nimble creature, if it would walk on the wall would crumble. So very discouraging remarks, and you always see throughout Nehemiah these individuals showing up together. Because I think the reality is critics run with critics, don't they? When you are doing something for the Lord, there will be people who criticize. They will criticize the work, the effort, the task, the accomplishment thus far, and it's destructive criticism. But I think we have to capture it. As I said earlier, what do you do when the critic comes? I think we have to evaluate the criticism. Not that you're accepting the critic, but to evaluate it, to find out, to weigh it, is there truth to this that is being said to me? That you wouldn't just immediately reject it because you don't have the same perspective of life, you don't hold to the same stuff in life, but you look at it, don't get defensive, don't make excuses right away. Ask yourself this question, could there be truth in this? Because how many know when you get in a disagreement with your spouse and your spouse brings something up to you, it's not because they don't like you. There's probably some truth to what they're saying. True? And so instead of like reacting to it, like sometimes I do, Robin, I'm right, to step back and say, wait a minute, is there some truth to this? You know, and to weigh it out. Ask the Lord, Lord, are you trying to show me anything? Because here's the reality, God can use anyone, anything to communicate to us, can't he? And it may be that person who comes to you with the wrong tone and the wrong attitude and yada, 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 but the Lord can use that. And then evaluate the nature of the criticism. Is a critic criticizing you? Are they attacking your character? Are they criticizing your beliefs in God and what God can do? And if they are, then let that be water off your back. But if not, then to weigh it. But these guys are taunting Nehemiah. They're taunting the rebuilders. Honestly, I can't help but hear a little bit of a few Monty Python Holy Grail comments coming through the pages of Nehemiah. If just to be honest, you know, I blow my nose at you, you know, things like that, that go away or I shall taunt you a second time, you know, things manifesting in my mind as I'm studying this the other day. And so the first thing that we notice as we look at this passage is that the criticism that he encountered. The second thing that I want to talk to you about is the cry that he expressed. Look at it in verse 4 and 5. It says, "Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt and let not their sin be blotted out by your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders. Don't miss what Nehemiah did. He doesn't try to defend himself. He doesn't push on the wall to prove them that, hey, it'll stand. He goes straight to God. God, hear the cry of our heart. He doesn't get in an argument with them. He doesn't try to shout them down. He doesn't try to prove his point. He says, God, hear what they're saying and doing. He goes straight to God. Look at the next part of his prayer. because it's not a pacifist prayer. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in the land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt. Let not their sin be blotted out from your sight. Wow, that doesn't sound like a very Christian prayer, does it? God, sick them. The prayer he prayed is very similar to some of the prayers that you read from King David throughout the Psalms. In Psalms 10, verse 15, 28, 4, 35, 5, or 35, 4, 4 55, 15, Psalms 58, 6, you see David praying similar type prayers. Why? I think it's important that as you read Nehemiah's prayer and you read the psalmist's prayer, if we could just kind of call a timeout real quick and look at this prayer. They were praying according to the will of God that had been revealed to them up to that point. The fact of the matter is, God said that he would judge the wicked, so they're praying according to that. So, in the New Testament, we see even with greater clarity how we need to pray. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus came to fulfill the law, true? And the law brings what? The law brings judgment. So Jesus came to fulfill the law, and in Matthew chapter 5, verse 43, we read this. You've heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. God's pattern in the New Testament area is for us to pray for people who criticize us, to pray for people who persecute you, who malign you, who say disparaging things to you. Romans chapter 12, the Apostle Paul writes these words, repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourself, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Can you imagine what would happen to those who were criticizing you if you brought them, I don't know, you had Gene. You called Gene and said, Gene, would you just make me one of those incredible apple pies that you make? You know, those 10-pound apple pies that you make? Would you make me one because I have a friend that I need to build a bridge with? Instead of walling up and drawing the line like we're so prone to do, what if you did something to where you blessed that person? I mean, think of a story. I couldn't think of my own personal one, maybe because I have not been good at it, but I thought about a pastor friend of mine who, they had a neighbor, and all of us at some time in our life, we have that neighbor. And this neighbor was mean. They were grumpy, you know, would yell if his kids would leave their toys on out in front and in the front yard, and it would bleed over into their neighbor's yard. The neighbor would be like just irate and get your kids out, toys out of my yard, and you know, just one of those. And they didn't know what to do. And so Debbie just baked a pie, took it to the neighbor. Hey, I apologize. Our kids, you know, they leave their toys out and apologize. Here's an apple pie. And that, doing that totally changed the future of that relationship. Paul goes on to write in verse 20, to the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. The message is a kind of a mystery. It's like, ha, I'm going to be nice so I can fry your scalp. That's not what Paul is saying. We're not called to take vengeance. The counsel of, if someone has a need, you meet that need. If they're thirsty or hungry, give them something. Oh, stink. If someone's critical of you and they are being harmful, if they're being hateful, what does that tell you about that person? The person has a need. Because hurt people, don't they? That their heart isn't right. And what's going to change their heart? God is. He's the only one that can change a heart. You're meeting a need in their life. It might be the one thing, listen, by you giving them that drink, giving them that food, whatever the scenario may be. As Paul writes, drinking food, but whatever the scenario may be, by you doing that, you may be allowing them to come into contact with God for the very first time. You may be opening the door in their life that allows God to step into their life. And the coals of fire that Paul mentions may be nothing more and nothing less than God's convicting power coming into their life that changes their heart. Not to make them feel bad, but suddenly they're going to see the Lord. They're going to sense the presence of the Lord. They're going to see a need in their life. So you and I have a responsibility to live according to the will of God. And as you go back to Nehemiah chapter 4, Nehemiah is living according to the revelation of God's will that he had as he was walking with God. And so he prays accordingly. But we're living to a higher law. It's a law of love, and we are to pray for our enemies. We are to pray for those who criticize us. Nehemiah prays to God, and he goes to God with the criticism. It leads us to the third thing. It's this, the construction he encouraged. He's been criticized, but look at what he encouraged. So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. He'd been criticized, right? But he doesn't launch into a big defense. He doesn't try to justify himself. He doesn't gather some of his buddies, and they don't go down to the local coffee shop and focus on the naysayers. He listens to their criticism, and he says, hand me another brick. Hand me another stone. Chuck Swindoll says this, nothing excites Satan or the critic more than for his negativism to result in the slowdown of progress. The easiest thing to do when one is criticized is to give up. Isn't that true? In 2 weeks, because next week's Easter, we're going to talk about dealing with discouragement. It's going to be good. I'm excited for it, but let's just be honest. Some of the criticism that you get can be very good for you. If you allow it, if it causes you to evaluate your why, to ponder the motives of your heart, those are good things. How do you respond to criticism? That's good. You respond with kindness. How do you respond to criticism that's not good? You respond with kindness. You pray for that individual. But you know what you do? You keep laying the bricks. You keep building the wall. You keep fulfilling what God has told you to fulfill. And don't get caught up in the politics of a situation or in the opinions of others. Just build your wall. Just stay faithful. So we built the wall, and the wall was joined together half its height, for the people had a mind to work. In closing, as we wrap this up this morning, worship team, if you'd come, I just want to leave you with three observations regarding criticism. The first one is this, and we've said it several times already, not all criticism is bad. Look at your neighbor and say, it's not all bad. At times, it allows us to see things that we need to adjust in our life, in our work, in our ministry, in our day-to-day. Can I just encourage us in this? It's easier for some of us than others, but don't allow yourself to be thin-skinned. All right? Don't take, if you can, and I know we're all wired different, and I know for some of us, some of us probably need to remove a few layers of skin, you know? But don't be too thin-skinned and take offense to stuff. Because the moment we take offense to stuff, and this is a whole nother message, but the moment you allow something to become an offense, you lose. Not all criticism is bad. Secondly, we must learn to evaluate all criticism. God, you know what my heart is. And if there's truth to what has just been said to me, search my heart. Because I want to walk in the fullness of what you want me to be and what you're calling me to be. Search my heart. I don't want to just brush it off. God, I want you to use this to refine me. Number three is this. Be slow to criticize others. Can I just encourage us? Before you go criticizing someone else, make sure you take to heart the words of Jesus, where he said, by the measure you use, it'll be measured to you. Make sure that you don't have a log in your own eye when you're dealing with a speck in somebody else's eye. Do you know what I'm saying? And then lastly, with that thought of being slow to criticize others, there, think for all of us. I was thinking about this even this morning, dealing with, you know, whether you're in your home and dealing with situations in your home or it's outside your house. I think there should be a brokenness in our heart and a humility in our heart when we have to go to someone and confront them. I mean, if we're excited about confronting somebody, that says something about what's going on in here. There should be a humility and a brokenness. If that attitude isn't there, I want to admonish you, be very, very careful before you go and confront somebody. And number four, when receiving criticism, we need to ask God to give us a Christ-like spirit. God, give me a spirit like your son had when he was criticized, like he had when people aligned themselves against him. Give me that kind of spirit. 100 years ago now, Charles Haddon Spurgeon was an incredible revivalist preacher of the 1800s. And he had a good friend, Dr. Newman Hall. He and his friend were talking one day. Dr. Hall had written a book entitled Come to Jesus. And another preacher had published an article on Hall's book and just ran the book through the ringer. Just was very negative and spoke very direct to what Hall had written about. And at first, Hall was hurt. But the more he thought about it, the madder he became. And in response to that criticism, he wrote a letter of protest. His letter was full of retaliatory remarks and comments directed to Dr. Hall. But before he mailed it to Dr. Hall, he took it to Spurgeon for his opinion. Spurgeon sat down. He read it carefully. He handed it back. And he asserted that the letter was excellent, that it was very well written, and the writer of the article deserved everything that Hall had said in his letter. But he added, the letter lacks one thing. And after a pause, Spurgeon continued, under your signature, Dr. Hall, you ought to write the words, author of Come to Jesus. The two men looked at each other. They pondered the words that Spurgeon had just spoke. And then Hall grabbed the letter and he tore it up. Tore it into shreds. Because there's something about the Spirit of Christ. If we will embrace that Spirit and embody that Spirit, it will help us in responding to criticism.